Welcome everybody to your Bronx Sports Jedi MMA weekly program here in the Bronx Sports Jedi Network. I'm Austin and my co-host tonight, Chef Dan. First of all, how are you doing tonight, Chef Dan?
Salute to you, Austin. Hope you're doing well. Hope everything's doing well with you and your family. I'm doing well myself, man. I enjoyed the weekend. We had some good fights, some interesting conversations after the fight. I think the conversations were more interesting than the fights, and they're going to have our imaginations running. So we'll get into that tonight. But how are you?
I'm doing pretty good. Doing all right. You know, solid day. Can't complain. Although I pressed the old intro, my bad. But hey, it is what it is. We're all human. But hey, anyway, good day. I'm excited for tonight. You know, also you can watch this, listen to us on podcast platforms, Anchor FM, Spotify, Podbean, Reason FM, and Buzzsprout, etc. Also, if you're busy at work and you don't want YouTube to drain your battery and phone, you can listen to us on these platforms as well. So I want to shout that out as well. And don't forget the Bronx. Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I'll say don't forget the Bronx Sports Jedi merch store, which we do have here. You know, you can get these shirts and other merch on our website, Bronx Sports Jedi. And I believe we have a QR code, if I'm mistaken.
Most definitely. If you're watching on the YouTube channel right now, if you look up top on the screen, there's a QR code. So if you're watching on your laptop, and you just take your phone out, you scan the QR code, it takes you directly to the merch store. There you can cop some of the, latest Bronx Sports Jedi Network swag right here. You know, we got some good shirts. Also got the Knicks stuff right here. Got Obi right. Toppin slamming it down. So that's some good stuff right there.
Definitely, most definitely, yep. Anyway, let's get on the show. First, I'll start with Anthony Joshua. I know you want to start off there.
Yeah, most definitely I want to start off there because he had some interesting comments this weekend. He kind of, he put his fans on tilt with these comments. He kind of let us know what he's thinking and where he's at in his mentality. He let us know that he's done with losing and that he's done trying to learn the sweet science of boxing. He said he's put it all together now and he's rolling with it. If you like it, come watch. If you don't watch. Whether the refs like his style or not, he might get thrown to the floor in the next fight because it's war. Boxing is good, but when it comes to 12-round championship fights, it's mad. I'm heading into my 12th world title fight now, and the learning's done. It's war. It's straight war. I'm annoyed. I'm boiling up even speaking about it. I started firing up a bit. It's that passion to win, and I love a challenge. He goes on to say things like, he promises murder and that it is a war for him. Man, the first thing I want to say is like it's about damn time. This is the mentality he should be having. It shouldn't be studying every single fight. The time to study is during your fight, your training camp. That's it. That's really what I want to say. Like, it's about damn time. Like, you are a heavyweight in boxing. At any moment, it can be lights out for you. And you're so focused on trying to fight the perfect fight, every fight. It's visible right there in his fighting style. And that's the problem. Like, the reason why you see Anthony Joshua and everyone is so annoyed with him is because you can clearly see the talent. The issue is he's not accessing the full 100% of that talent. And so we'll see on the next Juszczyk fight. I don't even want to, I don't want to stick on this topic too much. He's annoying. This is what's annoying about him. So we'll just move on to the cost of Vettori fight for now. It's about damn time. That's all I want to say. It's about damn time.
Okay, yeah, we'll go switch to MMA now. And you mentioned this past weekend we did have a UFC card in Vegas. And the main event was Paul Costa versus Marvin Vettori. At light heavyweight, not when he fought originally because Paul Costa couldn't make weight. And then they moved up to catchweight, 185. And you go see side put a heavyweight. And in this fight, Marvin Vettori gets a victory, 48-46 at all three judges' scorecards. Now, 46 is because Paul Cosa was deducted a point in the second round for an eye poke. And that's why instead of 48-47, it's 48-46. Although he won that round, I think, of all three judges' scorecards. And this was a pretty entertaining fight. I mean, this was so exciting. This fight was back and forth. It was action packed. They both were hitting each other with some shot with big shots. But, there were times where they stung each other, and Marvin's toughness really showed in this fight. I mean, he survived some nasty body shots, maybe kicks, punches, etc., and even kicks to the head, and yet he still survived. He was able to hurt Paulo Costa as well, and target him and even take him down and get him again top position, and then even the fourth round. After Paul had did to him the third round, I forget which round, but I know one round Paul got on top of him, took him down, then the other round Marvin took him down, and they were both, ground and pound stuff, trying to hurt each other, and I love this fight. This fight was incredible. And congratulations to Marvin Torrey. Marvin Torrey, what a performance, showing toughness, skill, and guts. I mean, Marvin Torrey gained a lot of new respect from a lot of fans, and gained a lot of fans as well after this past week. I mean, what are your thoughts on this fight, Dan?
This fight was very, very good. I agree with you there in the sense, like, both of these guys came within reason. Like, they needed to put on the show for a reason, especially after, like, all the shenanigans that happened prior to the fight, leading up to the fight. Like, it had to be a show, because Marvin Vettori, he let us know that he was angry, he was upset, he felt disrespected, and so he had to show that in the ring. This is the one job where if you don't like your coworker, you can punch them in their face. So you can, he can do that, and he took full advantage of that. Paulo Costa had to put on a show, because if he didn't, this possibly could have been his last fight in the UFC. After not making weight, like, multiple times, not only just in this fight, but throughout his career, he's already had problems with weight. But then in this fight, you can't make the 185. So now you agree to a catch weight of 195. You can't make the 195. So now they have to bump it up to 205. So if Israel Adesanya watches this fight and says this does nothing for the division, he has a gripe with it. But both of these guys put on a show, not to take away from, the weight shenanigans. Both of these guys really did put on a show. Even if you wanted to add in the point that was taken away from the earlier round due to the eye poke from Paulo Costa, I still say Marvin Vettori won this fight convincingly to me. Yep. It was a different Marvin Vettori completely. This guy, he did not want to wrestle at all. It was stand up and strictly punch you in the face and do all the damage I can while we're standing up. I don't want to take it to wrestling. And the only time he did wrestle, honestly, was about 45 seconds left in the fifth round. He grabs Paulo Costa into a clinch and kind of just holds him there to secure the victory, because that's what, realistically, after the fight, that's what I wanted him to do. Watching the fight, it would have been nice for him to get a firework finish, but realistically, you just get out of there with the win, you get out of there with the extra money from the purse due to the missed weight, and you kind of get out of there with your pride intact, saying, hey, I went in there letting you guys know I was going to win the fight standing up, I wasn't going to wrestle at all, and that's how he went about it. Paulo Costa, kudos to him, because he still had his weapons and he was using them out there. His jab was very effective, but the kicks were much more effective. In the third and fourth round, he tried wrestling a little, but then realized that Marvin Vettori was having none of it and wanted to stand up. And it even lended into his fifth round approach of trying to get a knockout, but Marvin Vettori was smarter to it, more hipper to it, and won the fight. So convincingly a good fight for Marvin Vettori all around. And really the surprising thing to me is, Paulo Costa's people said that he was moving to light heavyweight, but before that the news came out that Dana White officially announced that he was moving to light heavyweight. So Dana White being done with the shenanigans of the weight of the weight issues with Paulo Costa and forcibly moving the athlete to another division. That was surprising to me because I feel like some athletes do need that, but it is truly up to their own discretion. Part of being a fighter is having the freedom to fight in that weight class. So that was interesting to me, Austin. How'd you see that?
Well, it was kind of surprising because, you know, Dana White said that because, you know, Paul Costa has had some trouble making weight. This was, I think, the first time he made what miss weight. Technically he didn't miss weight, but you get what I mean. But, right, and, you know, and plus, I think maybe the whole antics leading up to the week, the whole week to lead up to the fight, kind of just rub a lot of people the wrong way. You know, a lot of MMA media, MMA media fans, other fighters, and rub Dana White the wrong way. So Dana White says, "Screw it, I'm just gonna go out. You know what? My instead of doing these shenanigans again, I'm just gonna go up. You know, make you go up in 205 then instead of dealing this, you know, shenanigans again. Because I know him and Paulo were having some issues prior to this split on last week." I forget what it was, but they were having those issues. And, yeah, so, yeah, and at this, Dana White, instead of, you know, dealing the same issues of him missing, making weight, he's just having bump up to 205. I think that's what it is. And also, I want to give Paulo some credit, because in the end of that first round, Paulo tired. He looked gassed. Looked like he was, like, almost going to be exhausted. But that second round, he won that round. Well, he did tell him that went around because I poke. And then that fifth round, I mean, he really was hurting for Torre going for the finish. And I want to give him credit there. But, yeah, I mean, it is kind of surprising, but I get why Dana White did it. So, I mean, I can't really fault Dana at all.
I mean, but this is where I say the speculation is more interesting than the fight. Excuse me. You have a Paulo Costa who I'm guessing Dana White doesn't want to lose because his antics truly did turn a lot of people off on the fight. Like, I watched the card, but it wasn't much to speak about to me personally. There were some great performances, but overall the card wasn't, you know, it wasn't enticing to me. Though this fight was, this fight ended up surprising me, and that's what I can say about this fight, is it ended up surprising me. But having a Paulo Costa that, you know, he technically doesn't want to lose, right? Because he is still a talent. Like, regardless of the weight shenanigans he pulled before this fight, he was able to put on a product that was good over the weekend. And so my question is, will this be the last time we see Dana White exercising his power to say, hey, to a fighter, exercising his power to a fighter to say, hey, you're no longer in this weight class. You're either moving up or I'm not using you as a fighter anymore.
It won't be the last time. It'll happen again. We don't know when, but it'll probably happen again with some other fighter. It probably will. I wouldn't be surprised.
I mean, we see a guy in Davison Figueiredo, for instance.
Right. Oh, good point. Yeah, good point.
His championship run was impressive.
Yeah.
He really took on all challengers, and even like having that good fight with Brandon Moreno at the end of 2 years ago. That was impressive because he was able to defend the title so many times during the pandemic year. And so, like, having that type of talent, do you tell him after this fight with Brandon Moreno, if he loses this, like, you know, hey, you're not in this division anymore, I'm moving you up?
Yeah, I mean, it depends. I mean, if he struggles making the weight, maybe he loses, yeah, but... Who knows? It's something we gotta see, obviously, what happens when they do fight.
But this is the thing, like, this is with a fighter who, I mean, Davison is the first thing that comes to my mind as far as, like, an athlete who consistently makes trouble, who has trouble making the weight. But I'm pretty sure there's other guys who, you know, are very talented, but we know they have trouble with the scale. That's the one thing that's beating them. And so it even affects their performance. And we don't want to see that guy hampered.
Right. That's a good point, yeah. Or hopefully he can turn around. Like Mackenzie Dern, if you remember, was having trouble making 115, but then she recently turned around and was able to. Now she makes weight usually on point and still go out and perform, you know, despite her losing her last fight, but before that she was on a roll. But you get what I mean, though.
Aspen Ladd.
Mm-hmm.
I know Kevin Lee made the move himself, but let's say Kevin Lee was stubborn.
Yeah, good point.
Like, these are interesting points. And so these are just some things I wanted to point out to the crowd, point out to the chat, and just have them think about it. Robert Parr, salute to you. I see you in the chat, always supporting, man. Salute and love, brother. I hope everything's doing well with you and your family. You know, same. Knicks just got a solid win tonight, man. Hope you're doing well. Enjoy that. Celebrate that.
Yep, definitely. Definitely. So let's see, Robert, thank you for watching us and watching us live. We appreciate your support. And everyone's watching us right now, whether we're live or later on after this video is uploaded, after we're done recording. Thank you guys for watching this. Thank you guys for watching us.
Most definitely. Salute to the Philippines. You guys always show love to the Bronx Sports Jedi Network. Like, salute to you guys over in the Philippines. You know, I know it's early right now. So you guys are asleep. Later on, you guys going to watch the videos, but salute. Yeah, always show support. Salute and just check out the podcast format. I know y'all working and YouTube kills the phone battery sometimes. Just check out the podcast format. It's easy and it's dope and it's fun. But yeah, let's move on to Bellator, where they had a very interesting fight. Very interesting fight.
They did.
Fedor versus Tim Johnson. And this ended in the first round.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Austin, you take it away, man. You're cheesing right now.
Yeah.
You're cheesing. You had fun with this fight. Tell me what you saw.
This fight had a lot of drama and action going in this, you know, in the couple minutes that was ended, because there were moments where Tim Johnson did connect with Fedor and you're kind of like wondering, oh no, it's gonna get dropped, but Fedor survived. And then it was, you know, Johnson was moving forward, but then Fedor moved forward, and then Fedor was, you know, back near the cage, not on the cage, but near it, and Fedor hits him this combination out of nowhere, and his fast hands, and it just drops. Tim Johnson back. I mean, Tim Johnson goes night like that. It was like, oh, what? And then it was impressive because it was another first round finish for Fedor. I'm trying to remember. That's his. It's 20-something first-round finishes Fedor's had in his career. He's got a lot of first-round finishes. Now, granted, fighting in Japan, the first round was 10 minutes over there in the Pride and stuff. So it was a little bit different, but still, that's a lot of finishes within the first 10 minutes of a fight, which is pretty damn impressive when you think about it. And Fedor, one of the things he always had was fast hands. Even back in the day, his hands were fast. And he was always one of the faster heavyweights, and his speed a lot of times shown in this fight, and where he looked like he was the faster guy against Tim Johnson, despite being 9 years older than him. But speed was still there, and speed kills, as the old saying says. If you have good speed, you can avoid getting, especially in heavyweight, you can avoid getting big shots. You can come in and catch heavyweights off guard, and so that's what he did with Tim Johnson. He caught him off guard, him with a 3-punch combination, and finished with the right hook, and just dropped him, and he was done. And it was just like, oh, he's done? Oh, dang. Okay. All right, Fedor. And then Fedor, and it was a big victory considering this was Fedor's fighting his home country, Russia, and Moscow, too. He hadn't been in Moscow in like nine years, so for the Russian people seeing their hero, Fedor, who's like a big celebrity over there, get another victory. What might be his last fight. I'm not saying it is, but he did, last week on the Ariel Helwani show, he did say it might be his last fight. So, I mean, so seeing him get a victory, his potential last fight, or at least maybe his last fight in Russia from his people, that was kind of a cool sight to see, especially knowing that this could be his last dance.
Man. This was very impressive. This was. This victory showed you why certain names are just immortal in the game. There are certain people. Oh, man. Is this his last fight?
He said it might be an Aaron Wine show.
But is this his last fight?
Who knows? Yeah, that's a great question.
I mean, is this his last fight? The only thing I can ask is this his last fight? Because you have a guy who clearly right now you have a guy who beat you have a guy in Fedor who just beat a guy in Tim Johnson, who granted he's on the skid right now, but he lost to Valentin Moldovsky, but he just recently won against Chet Congo, and we spoke about how impressive Chet Congo is and how he's still doing his thing. Like, is this Fedor's last fight? And the reason why I keep asking that question is because he looks like one of those new age heavyweights. But he's always had this type of style of fighting, being quick, having the heavy hands. You know he can take you down, but he'd rather knock you out. Like, and great use of the octagon, great use of footwork. He's dodging and weaving. He can take a punch, but then, you know, stay in the pocket long enough to give one back, give a few more back. And, you know, if it hurts you more, that's all he was looking for. He knows the exchange is there. Like, is this his last fight? I don't know what to say, man.
I don't know either. Yeah.
Wait, can I ask you a question now?
Hey, yeah, go ahead.
Would Fedor have been as dominant as he was if he was in the UFC?
Yeah, because here's the thing that people don't talk about. The UFC heavyweight division back in the days was not a great division at all. It really wasn't until, like, really the 2013-ish, and they brought the Strikeforce guys over. Because for a long time, heavyweight division, they had a couple guys, but it was never that deep. It never was at the time. It was always Strike Pride, and then Strikeforce for a while had the better heavyweight. So, you know, Fedor Prime, you can make argument, was 2006, like, you know, like 05, like, you know, like his peak was like, what, 05 to like 08-ish, 09? By that time, he was like 29, like 33 at that point. And he had guys like Tim Sylvia and Andre Arlovski down with the heavyweight division. Those are two guys he ended up beating, you know, back-to-back in Affliction when that was a company back in the day. And also, you know, his rival, well, his Antonio Rodrigo Nogueira Minotauro won the interim heavyweight championship, and he beat him twice in Pride. And even Frank Mir was there, and, you know, granted, Frank Mir, when they fought, well, they both were older when they fought each other, Frank Mir, and he knocked out Frank Mir. So, I mean, yeah, because a lot of the top heavyweights at the time were, at the time, the UFC from, like, that period. He ended up beating them anyway. Even if he fought Randy Couture, I still think he would beat Randy Couture. I think he would just use his ensemble background and maybe, you know, and keep the fight standing, because he has better standing than, better stand-up than Randy Couture, back in my opinion, just watching both guys fight. So, yeah, to me, he would have done well in the UFC.
Okay, so then here's my next question. Do you think the knowing who Dana White is, do you think the talent gap would have stayed as large as it was?
No, it would close, because Cain Velasquez, Junior Santos, those two guys were there. And then, you know, well, I was going to say Mark Hunt, but I remember he beat Mark Hunt in Pride.
He beat Mark Hunt, yeah.
In, like, 06, yeah, last Pride fight. But, yeah, like Kane and Junior Santos, you know, would have definitely been interesting fights. You know, if he was still in the UFC, let's say he went to the UFC, it's still there, did well. Because those guys could have given him some problems. You know, especially, you know, different problems, but still. And then maybe, you know, Cormier, who knows? Because, you know, Cormier, you know, apparently back in the day, he used to be known as Black Fedor. That was his nickname because he was small heavyweight speed, just like Fedor. So, I mean, who knows? I mean, it would close. Maybe one of them might beat him. Probably. More likely, yeah, I think he would have. Well, one of them would eventually beat him. Probably. Because eventually he was going to lose. I mean, he lost to Verdum, which at the time was a major upset. But then you see what Verdum became. And things like, hindsight's kind of like, well, Verdum is pretty great himself. And he's got great jiu-jitsu, especially off his back. I mean, that's how he's able to get Fedor. Fedor was trying to ground and pound him, called Fedor Mim Tap. And then, you know, Verdum went on, you know, become the UFC heavyweight champion. You know, made Cain Velasquez tap out.
Most definitely. Next question I want to ask, man. Prime Fedor versus Prime Stipe.
Oh, that's the debate, because that's the two greatest heavyweights in MMA. That's needed. That's a great question. That would have been.
How do you think that goes?
That's a. Because Stipe is probably the better stand up fighter with his boxing. And Stipe's got wrestling, but I think Fedor grappling is better just because of the Sambo background and things. And once Fedor took guys down and got on top of them, it was dangerous because he arguably has the greatest ground and pound in MMA history. Him and Khabib are like the two best. If you ever watch Fedor ground and pound, it was dangerous. It was deadly what he used to do, guys, because he would use both hands to, you know, attack his opponents, where guys you sometimes primarily use one hand, one arm. So I mean, yeah, I don't know, man. That's a pick 'em fight, because I can see both. Because Prime Fedor, Prime Stipe, it's a pick 'em. And up here, I say, well, how can you say that? Well, that's because Fedor in his prime was pretty damn good. Great grappling, good stand up, speed. Yeah, a lot of his things would translate him on UFC heavyweight division. If he was 10 years younger, it would have. A lot of it would have. You know, and especially, you know, people who say Stipe would just roll over Fedor are people who have never watched Fedor fight. That's kind of a silly statement. Especially if you haven't gone back and watched those fights in Japan or even his debut fight in Strikeforce or Affliction or whatever. Fedor had, he always had, you know, Fedor has always been great. That's not taking away from Stipe, because I think Stipe is good enough to where he could beat Fedor if they were full in their prime.
I mean, but like, let's match make that right now. Let's discuss that right now. Does that go five rounds?
No. It'd be shock if it goes five rounds.
Okay. So it doesn't go five rounds. Where does it stop? What's the lengthiest amount of time you're giving it?
20 minutes? Like maybe in the fourth round, fifth round? Yeah, you know what? It could go five rounds, because Mirko Krokov Fedor went five rounds. Not five rounds, but with the full distance in Pride. They didn't have five rounds back. Pride. There was a difference. They had 25 minutes, but it was first round 10 minutes, second round 10 minutes, third round 5 minutes.
Yeah, but you know, we know they had the gas tank. We know they had the gas tank to go 25.
Yeah, and that fight ended in decision, which, you know, you think Fedor or Mirko would have been if someone would have been stopped, but that wasn't the case. So it's possible Stipe and Fedor could end 25.
Okay, so there is a possibility it goes five rounds,
right?
But we both agree it's not, like, chances are it doesn't end in five rounds, right?
Yeah, right.
Because Fedor is at like, all right, we both know the first round they're gonna dance around, try to get into range, but Fedor is really gonna initiate getting into the range first. Stipe has enough hand and enough stand-up game to kind of strike with him, to kind of back him up a little. Fedor is going to have to find a way to get him surprisingly, you know, backing up, things of that nature, right?
Right.
So let's end the first round there, standing up. We give Fedor the 10-9, right? He was more active. He was getting more into the range.
Right.
Okay. Second round. Man, I can't believe we're talking a hypothetical matchup here. Second round, right?
Yeah.
Second round, Fedor is he's going to consistently do the same thing. So now Stipe goes for a shoot. Does he get it the first time?
Nah, I don't think so.
Okay.
Now, he might shoot. Get it. He's got good wrestling, Stipe. He's underrated, but still.
Okay, so he shoots. He doesn't get the takedown, but they go into a clinch. They press up against the clinch, right?
Right.
Who's got better handwork there in the clinch?
Wow. I'm going to go, I guess Fedor. No. I don't know. No, because.
Ladies and gentlemen, wait. Before you go, ladies and gentlemen, this is how we get into breakdown the MMA game right here. Is details to this.
Yeah, no, because I'm thinking the DC fight. Remember the first DC fight? They got in the clinch and DC just knocked him out like that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking of that. That's why I thought Fedor, but I'm like, well, maybe not. But
okay, so then wait. Do you consider Stipe's prime before the DC fight or after?
During it. His prime was nuts. It was during that time. You know, Stipe, you know, from... You want to say after the Junior Santos loss in 2014, that back and forth fight to now? You can consider that his prime. Stipe.
Yeah. I mean,
yeah, he lost DC, but DC is one of the all-time greats.
Yes.
He avenged that loss twice. He beat DC twice after that.
Most definitely. And actually, the second time, truthfully, I think DC kind of gave up early.
Really?
I think the second time DC had a chance to get out of there, I think his approach to training camp was all wrong. I think he came in heavier for no reason. He should have came in the same weight. I think he knew it was his last fight, and he prematurely went out. I think DC had a chance to kind of go back in there and make it a fight.
Okay, but
that's my opinion. But let's get back to it. Who's got better hands in the clinch, Fedor, Prime Fedor, or Prime Stipe?
I don't know.
Okay, let's. All right, you know what? They go back and forth. We don't decide that the second round, right? They're going back and forth. Stipe comes out of the clinch, but he's, you know, been landing some shots. He comes out. He gets a nice combo. Boom, boom. Fedor reels a little. He tries to go back in. Does he get the second takedown?
He probably would. If he rocks him, yeah, he could. If he rocks him.
Okay,
yeah.
Now he's on top. If Stipe's on top, does he win? Does he win that round convincingly?
Yeah, he can. He can. Yeah.
And he can stay on top throughout the round. Like, let's say this happens 2:30.
I think he can for a little bit. I think Fedor will at least be working to try to get out, scramble, get out, or even reverse position, probably, at least. But I think Steve is good enough to where he can still win the round. Even if Fedor got up, he still could win the round because of his takedown rocking him and down and pound. I mean, Steve is good enough to do that.
Okay, so they tied 1-1 going into the third round. How do you think Fedor attacks that now?
I honestly don't know because he might try to get both, you know, try to, you know, hurt Steve, maybe get to, you know, maybe tries to, you know, try to head on maybe a little bit. If he tries to head on Stipe, just counter him, probably knock him out if he does that. Or he's just patient, you know, maybe just does try to do a body shot or try to grappling himself, initiate. Maybe then he can hurt Stipe. Maybe then he can steal around from Stipe, try to initiate the grappling himself.
And what's Stipe's approach basically throughout this round? The same thing, right?
Yes.
Go straight to the wrestling.
Bro, the wrestling, but he needs to be careful because Fedor can. Because Sambo, one of the aspects of it is judo. And judo, if you know judo, they use your momentum against you. He could flip it all of a sudden, Stipe. Next thing you know, Stipe's on bottom, and that's dangerous for him. It's something that you got to take into account.
Okay, so then we'll leave it at that with there. We'll ask that question to the chat. You know, who do they think wins in a heavyweight title matchup in the UFC? A prime Stipe versus a prime Fedor. You guys tell me 5 rounds, both of them in their prime. Who do y'all think wins that? Who takes home the gold? With that, I want to get right into what's going on this Saturday. I'm very interested this Saturday. They giving this one away for damn near for free, unless you pay for ESPN Plus. It's not technically for free, but you know, they're not this one. This could have been a pay-per-view card right here. You got two title fights on the card right now. Yep. You got Jan Blachowicz versus Glover Teixeira for the light heavyweight championship. And you have Peter Yan versus Corey Sandhagen for the UFC interim bantamweight championship. Also on the card, ooh, this is stacked card. Yes, we got Islam Makhachev versus Dan Hooker in lightweight division. We got Alexander Volkov versus Marcin Tybura in the heavyweight division. I don't think that one goes the distance. We got Jing Liang Li versus Khamzat Chimaev, the return of Khabib 2.0. This guy was getting ready to dominate two weight classes, so I'd love to see how he returns. And then we have Magomed Ankalaev versus Volkan Uzdemir. Like, this is gonna be, oh my god, this is a great card.
Yes,
Austin, you tell me, what's your thoughts on this card, man?
Well, I wanted to end the belt discussion by saying that Usman Nurmagomedov for staying undefeated, playing on the same card as Fedor in Russia, and now we go from Usman Nurmagomedov to part of Khabib's team in Islam Makhachev, who, in my opinion, is Khabib 2.0 is Islam, more so than Khamzat. I can see why you say Khamzat, but Islam is just, it seems like this is his time to shine and possibly be a world champion next year. But he's going against Dan Hooker, who's one of the better strikers in his weight class. I want to see, how does Islam respond? Does Islam try to prove he can strike as well? Or if he do, as they say, father's plan, grapple him to death, grapple him until he can get a submission or a KO, ground and pound. Also, how does Dan Hooker do, considering he fought the last pay-per-view in late September, the last 266. Now he has a quick turnaround. He was still in somewhat shape. Now he's going against a wrestler, a guy who's a grappler, I should say, not a wrestler, but a grappler who's got wrestling, who's really phenomenal, but also can strike too. And Islam's got all the hype. How's Dan Hooker? How's he respond? Handle his takedowns? Can he keep up on the feet? Can he use his height to his advantage and maybe use his. No, Grant. Well, I'll take it to the back. He's only 2 inches taller than Islam, so he's not exactly a big height. That's for the co-main event. That's more of the height difference. That's where it's more in play. I'm interested to see and what happens here. Can Dan Hooker keep on the feet and use his striking, kickboxing and striking to go out there and hurt Islam and maybe steal the height from Islam? Or does Islam keep doing his thing and just dominate and win, and then as he ascends to his top, so it looks like a coronation of a world title by next year, potentially.
Most definitely. That's going to be very interesting, because especially coming off of the loss to Michael Chandler, we saw how frustrated Dan Hooker was with as far as like dealing with a grappler. And so he requested of the UFC that his last opponent be a grappler. We saw him have a better dealing with, I believe it was Nasrat. I forget his last name. It's very hard to pronounce, but Nasrat is his first name. And he's a very good grappler, and we saw Dan Hooker having success with him. But now you're having a guy who I feel has a lot more pressure than Michael Chandler when it comes to grappling and having the ability to take someone down. And so that would be a great matchup for Dan Hooker. Is can he stuff those takedowns? Can he have the ability to keep that space and keep it to a stand-up game and really strike? And for Islam Makhachev, man, every round starts off on the feet. So you kind of have to do some striking. You can't just abandon it and go straight to wrestling. So with him, can he strike with Dan Hooker, at least, not to equate it, but at least give him a fighting chance to advance and go into wrestling. So that's going to be very interesting fight right there, and a very interesting progression to see throughout that matchup. To me, the interest, the One of the more interesting matchups to me is Peter Yan versus Corey Sandhagen, the co-main event right there, man. This is pressure. This is the same thing. This is the same thing essentially, but you have a guy in Peter Yan who I believe is a better striker than Islam Makhachev. So he's more willing to do the stand-up game. But you have a guy in Corey Sandhagen who, when it comes to the accuracy and the striking, man, he is up there. He is top tier in the accuracy and the striking, and he is nasty striking. Like, this is weird. Like, can Corey Sandhagen deal with the forward pressure? Because he had a tough time dealing with the forward pressure versus TJ Dillashaw. We saw that was what kind of made him look like he was fighting a losing battle, even though the numbers at the end of the fight were very close. And some even argued that Corey Sandhagen possibly won that fight, but the judges saw it differently. So can Corey Sandhagen find a way to, you know, deal with a forward pressure, a fighter who's coming forward constantly and not consistently making you back up? And another thing for Corey Sandhagen to me, man, is when you're dealing with the striker, he's a long limb guy. He's very tall. How do you negate the long kicks? The leg kicks. How do you negate those to at least help you have more freedom of movement during the later rounds? Because that's going to be very important for him. If he can have that freedom of movement, then I feel like he can introduce more leg kicks later on into the round. And so he's not, trying to look for knockouts doing other type of movements. The last thing for me for Corey Sandhagen on my breakdown of him is I need to see less spinning attacks. If you're going to bring those out, do that, like, do it rarely. It can't be that when you're desperate, you're just going to throw a spinning attack, because those can get timed and you can spin yourself into a punch, or even worse with Peter Yan, man, you can spin yourself into a takedown. And if he takes him down, I think Peter Yan's pressure and just natural ability down on the ground, I think he's better than TJ Dillashaw to a degree to where he's not going to get that, you know, he's not going to get that freedom that TJ Dillashaw gave him to get back up.
Yeah, I agree with you there. I'm glad you mentioned that, because it seems like he can't be doing spinning stuff. He can get timed with that and also taking down Peter Yan when he gets on top. It's very good on the top. But also, I do want to mention, I mentioned earlier about being the tallest fighter. Corey Sandhagen is a much taller fighter than Peter Yan. He's got at least, several inches above Peter Yan. And I do wonder, can he use that to his advantage, especially with knees and stuff? You know, if he can learn how to fight, if he can learn how to fight tall and just, you know, outside, just, jab and stuff, keep Peter Yan away from getting close to him. Also, if you throw knees, that can possibly, you know, stop Peter Yan's advancement. I wonder if he can do that, and that can possibly slow down Peter Yan to the point where Yan, you know, gets a little beat up, and Corey might hit something big that can hurt Yan as well. That's something to think about too. And I do like this matchup, because they're two elite strikers too. Two of the top five bantamweights in the UFC, maybe the world even, if you think about it. But yeah, and these two, and this is exciting. I mean, this is a fight that we all thought we would see eventually. Because if you remember, leading up to the Yan and Sterling fight, Corey was the number contender. We all thought Corey would fight the winner of that fight before what happened in that fight, obviously. But yeah, the fact these two guys are fighting now, it's just, I'm excited, man. This is fireworks going to happen, these two. This is just in freaking incredible. I can't wait. Saturday afternoon can't come enough. What's the term?
It can't come here fast enough. I understand what you said. Yeah. It really can't come here fast enough. I agree with you there completely. And another thing I want to I agree with you there, but another point I wanted to commentate on as far as with Corey Sandhagen is, I think. Surprisingly, if he can use it, like, this is a gamble, but most of the times your best move is a gamble. But I think his best gamble for this fight is the clinch. I think that's where that knee comes into play. Where, you know, fighting tall comes into play. If you want to negate the leg kicks, you kind of maybe have to come in closer so he can't kick you. And with coming in closer, you don't want to stay in the range where he's close enough to where he's throwing or he feels close, he feels comfortable enough to shoot on you. So you want to be close enough to, you got to go in the clinch. That's the closest range to where Peter Yan, his power is going to be negated because he's close, too close to really, you know, reach back and throw punches. And so with that, you have the longer limbs. You're going to have the ability to kind of, if he can, you know, play with the space in the clinch. And I've seen fighters do this, and they're all, Corey Sandhagen has done this. He even did this in the Frankie Edgar fight where he played with the range in the clinch, pulls him in close, then releases them. So now you're playing with the range. You know where you want the fighter to be. If you're pulling in close, you're going for strikes. If you move him away, you're doing something else. You're probably throwing the elbow over the top or you're throwing some punches and bunches. If you're pulling them close, you're throwing in a knee. And once they want to separate, you release them and you throw punches and bunches. There's different ways to play with the clinch. He knows how to do this. He's a top five bantamweight. And so if he can execute that, I think that might be one of Corey Sandhagen's best friends in that fight.
Definitely. Yeah, that's a good point. Great point. Yeah, that could definitely be advantage. The clinch, how that works out, if he can take advantage of that. That's, you know, great points. Also, I do want to mention another fight in this card that I do want to mention is the return of Hamzat Chimaev. We haven't seen him in over a year. He's returning, going against Jang Leon Lee in a welterweight fight. Now, Jang Leon is number 11 ranked UFC welterweight, so he's a ranked opponent. First ranked opponent for Hamzat Chimaev. I mean, honestly, Jared Mershaw had more experience than Jang Leon, but Jang Leon has been a much better fighter in terms of success recently than even Mershaw has been. Jang Leon has won four of his last five fights, and I believe he's got 13 finishes, if I'm mistaken. And Hamza has finished all nine of his opponents in his MMA career: 6 knockouts, 3 submissions. So I want to see, you know, basically someone's getting finished, it seems like, in this fight. I mean, go ahead.
Most definitely, I agree with you there. Coming into this fight, Hamzat Chimaev, he had all the hype, and he would have been a bigger name, but he did catch a coronavirus, and it was one of the more severe cases, to the point where he did say he felt like he was going to die. He lost one of his senses, and he said it was hard for him to breathe. And so with that compromised position, he did not want to enter the ring. Understandably so, he wanted to be in the best condition possible. And so he had to have a year off. It's all understandable. We want fighters in the best condition. And especially for him, you know, he was a guy taking it away from the punches and kicks. You see how severe coronavirus was, because this guy, before he caught coronavirus, he was literally dancing between two divisions. He was a guy, like most fighters, we saw with Doughboy Costa, how hard it was for him to make middleweight. And then when it came to the catchweight, he missed that and had to make up another catchweight. So we see fighters, you know, preluding to the earlier conversation, there are some fighters who struggle with weight, but Hamzat Chimaev was able to make weight for two weight classes. And so I think in him doing that, at least him showing that once in the UFC, that made his cachet good enough to where the UFC was patient. They waited for him. They didn't release him. You saw that they released plenty of talented fighters. A guy in Antonio Arroyo who had a great fight against Joaquin Buckley recently. Joaquin Buckley, and that was a fireworks fight Joaquin Buckley got the better of him via knockout, but we knew that fight wasn't going the distance, that one of those guys were going to get knocked out. And so the UFC released Antonio Ahoyo, and he was a exciting fighter, but he didn't do what Khamzat Chimaev did. What I think was, it was more than the punches and the kicks. Being able to make weight for two different divisions, it shows you can make the commitment. And you're making the commitment twice within a week to fight. You're hungry, you want the competition, and you're willing to make the commitments. That's all Dana White could ask for of his competitors. And he knew how to market himself very well. He knew how to be on certain interview platforms, and he's a great interview. So you saw how COVID took away that star from the UFC for a moment. But now he's back, and he has a chance to redeem himself. I don't see this fight going to the distance.
No.
I primarily don't see Khamzat Chimaev allowing this fight to go to the distance, because especially coming off of COVID, putting myself in his shoes, I would want to end the fight quicker. Not to say that I'm now trying to burn my gas tank quicker, but I don't want to test my gas tank. The one thing I don't want to do in this fight is test my gas tank. That's maybe what Jiang Liang Li wants to do in this fight, but that's not Khamzat Chimaev's fight style, and that shouldn't be his test going into this fight. He shouldn't be wanting to test his gas tank. He's a forward pressure fighter, so it should be going for the finish.
Right. Yeah, I agree. I think I can understand that. It probably should be. And you're right. That you should probably go for the finish and not try to, test his gas tank. And plus, Jiang Liang, I mean, you might want to. One thing I do want to mention is that Jiang Liang lost to Neil Magny. Not his last fight, but his second last fight, because Jiang Liang won his last fight. And Neil Magny's a pretty good grappler. Very phenomenal grappler, and he used his grappling, if I remember that fight. Yeah, he used his grappling to win that fight, control Jiang Liang, and prevent him from doing his thing. Khamzat has a grappling background. I do think if you're Khamzat, you may want to use that grappling background against Jiang Liang and try, take him down, control him, maybe go for ground and pound, submission, or things like that, etc. If you're in this fight, so that's something that I think we may have to look out for watching this fight on Saturday afternoon. Here
on the East Coast. Most definitely. But if that is Khamzat's approach, do you think maybe he should just stick more? Both of these guys are really good grapplers. Do you think this fight never goes to the ground and both of these guys just stand up and strike? Because that's usually how it is in MMA.
I actually saw the press conference they had earlier today or tonight, but they're staring at each other very intensely, they both want to prove a point against each other. Like Jiang Liang wants to take the hype, and Khamzat wants to destroy him, let him know that, hey, I'm that good, I'm still that guy. And you could tell, and even the whenever the press conference, when they were like doing an interview, taking questions from the media. They were kind of like, you could tell there was like tension, like they were really like on each other. I guess there was tension between the two of them. If you go back and watch it, with them interrupting each other. Well, more so with Khamzat. I guess Khamzat knows Mandarin because he was speaking Mandarin. Khamzat knew exactly what Jiang Liang was saying. It was like kind of crazy.
That's dope. I gotta check that out. Discretion to the viewers, it's usually my day off today, but I got called in for work, so I missed the interview, so I'll check that out later on. But that's interesting to me. That's juicy to me. That already lets me know that now, coming off of these press conferences, that neither of these guys plan to grapple each other, that they really want to finish each other off. But even then, man, usually in MMA, if two great wrestlers are facing off against each other, usually doesn't end on the mat.
No, exactly. Two great wrestlers, even great grapplers, jiu-jitsu guys, it's stand-up wars. Usually, we have the better stand-up wins.
Yep.
Yeah. Another friend is, go ahead.
No, so with that being said, what was the next fight that you wanted to break down?
I wanted to break down the opener of the main event of the main card, which is Magomed Ankalaev versus Volkan Ozdemir. Ozdemir has come out of his KO loss to Yuri Prohaska. Before that, had won two in a row, arguably three, because the split decision loss to Dominic Reyes was controversial at the time. A lot of people thought he won. And then you got Ankalaev, who, if I'm not mistaken, I know he's come off the victory, or I believe Ian Kutalaiba. But let me see if it was that. I think he might fought after Ian Kutalaiba.
Yeah, he fought after Ian Kutalaiba. He beat Nikita Krylov.
Okay, yeah, you're right. Yep, okay. I was checking right here. In February, he beat Krylov. Now, Ankalaev has nine finishes, all knockout TKO. He doesn't go for submissions. And Ozdemir is a knockout guy. And his nickname used to be White Rumble because, for those of you who don't know, he was training partners with Anthony Rumble Johnson. He was named Anthony Rumble's number one training partner, if I'm mistaken. And because Ozdemir could knock a lot of dudes out. And so they both got power in their hands and their fists. It'll be interesting to see if who can implement their offense, whether it be Ozdemir or Ankalaev, because some people wonder if Ozdemir is still that guy that was when he came to UFC on burst into the scene, knocking dudes out within a minute or so and getting a title fight against Daniel Cormier. And also the guy who bounced back after losing to Cormier, Anthony Smith, and who lost that split decision, controversial decision, Dominic Reyes. Although, some say he might show some sign of life because he ended up winning his next two fights, like I mentioned, before losing to Yuri Prohaska. But also, is Magomed Ankalaev, is he the Dagestani fighter we're all sleeping on? Because we all talk about Islam, Makhachev, and there's Usman and Bellator. And then there's, I forget the other, not Hamza, he's Chechen. He's not Dagestani, but it's another Dagestani that people are keeping their eyes out. I forget. Askarov, there we go. That's who it was.
Yes.
But Magomed Ankalaev is, and Zabit, of course. Zabit, can't wait to see him back hopefully soon. But Magomed is the guy that everyone's kind of sleeping on. The guy keeps just winning. The guy only lost once in his career. And that was to Paul Craig, who's, one of the best, lightweights in the world in the U.S. right now. This guy is also on the rise. But since losing to Paul Craig, he's won six in a row, and he looks like a guy who will be fighting for the world title possibly soon, within the end of next year or 2023, possibly. Is this his coming out party where people finally start recognizing the talent Magomed Ankalaev actually is? Or can Volkan Ozdemir go back and steal the hype possibly and remind people he's still Volkan Ozdemir? Well, what are your thoughts on this fight?
I'm about to make a bold prediction right now. Ladies and gentlemen, for this main card, don't expect a lot of these fights to go the distance.
Yeah, I can see that, yeah.
I'm making that bold prediction right now because after you spoke about Magomed and when you said he beat Ian Kutalaba, I just remembered. He was the only guy to bully Ian Kutalaba.
Yeah.
These guys are coming forward with pressure and they're throwing leather. Ladies and gentlemen, this fight is not going the distance. A lot of these fights are not going the distance. And I'm not going to lie, he's coming off of a 2-win streak, so I kind of have to favorite Magomed, but. Yeah, this fight is not going the distance. No. That's the only thing I can say. It's not going the distance.
Yeah, I agree. And it was interesting to see if it was, who finishes each other, who knocks each other out. Because I'd be surprised at the submission because both guys are known for stopping guys with their fists. Not exactly their, submission grant. Although it could be submission. Watch it be a curveball. Watch it over a curveball and someone gets tapped out or choked out. Watch it.
It could possibly be, man. Remember, Vicente Luque versus Michael Chiesa.
Yes.
Who would have called out Luque via Darce?
Nobody.
Who would have called that out?
No one. That shocked me.
So anything can happen. It's ma hey, it magical things can happen on Saturday night. That I mean, well, Saturday morning, but
It's Saturday
magical.
night in Abu Dhabi.
Yeah, Saturday night in Abu Dhabi, really more so. I guess Saturday morning for us in the United States, but anything can truly happen.
Yes, definitely. Also, another fight I want to break down is the heavyweight matchup between Alexander Volkov and Marcin Tybura. Tybura's coming off a 5-fight win streak where he's looked really well in these 5 fights. He seems to like finally put it together in these last 5 fights. I mean, he's really looked. You could tell the guy's improved, and through you know, and he wins fights through a lot of different variations by TKO, knockout, or submission. Oh, excuse me. So he can win. So he's typically knockout or typically a submission. It's a combination of both. He has 15 of his 22 victories are finishes, including his last 2 fights. I mean, his last 2 fights are victories over Greg Hardy and Walt Harris, which were TKO punch victories. And you got Alexander Volkov, who's 33-9, who's also got 20. I believe. Let me make sure I got this correct. 22 finishes. No, excuse me. 22 KO and TKOs, and 25 of his 33 victories are finishes as well. So these both guys finish their fights. These are two finishers, two Eastern European heavyweights who are finishers. One's Russian Volkov, one's Polish and Tybura. And it's interesting to see can what happens. Can Tybura maybe does Tybura decide to stand with Alexander Volkov, who's a 6'7", usually a tall heavyweight. Although Tybura's not a short guy, I don't remember his height necessarily, but Volkov's typically taller than a lot of his opponents. Or does he decide stand and trade? You know, not stand and trade, but do a stand-up fight with Volkov, or does he try to get Volkov to the ground, try to finish him there, where he's had some recent success in the UFC, but also success with submissions as well. And these are big boys, so it's exciting to see heavyweights fight. What do you think of this fight, Dan?
This is going to be very interesting. Volkov does have the height advantage, 6'7" to 6'3", and Volkov is always going to have the reach advantage. He has an 81 inch reach advantage. So 81 in not 81 inch reach advantage, but 81 to 78, so a 3 inch reach advantage.
Okay.
So he's always, along with being the taller fighter, he's always going to have the reach advantage. Volkov, man, I know people haven't heard of him. People haven't been hearing his name recently, but like that's because his last loss was to Ciryl Gane, who's currently the interim heavyweight champion. After that, he had two victories, and before that, he had a loss against, I believe,
Chris Blades.
Curtis Blaydes, who's currently in the hunt to be a champion. So when you have a guy who's losing to top dogs, but he's not, you know. He's not losing to the scrubs either, and he's putting away guys like Alistair Overeem and making Alistair have his last fight. It kind of lets you know, like,
Or he's knocked out Verdum when he was a heavy underdog, when everyone thought Verdum's gonna sleepwalk it, destroy him too, back in the day, a couple years ago.
exactly. This is one of those fights where it kind of screams for everyone to say, "Hey, Marcin Tybura is, he's gonna win this fight. He's gonna win this fight." But man, if Volkov is more experienced than this guy, and I think, man, you're not fighting Ciryl Gane. You're fighting a guy who's gonna rush in and is shorter.
Yes,
And
and
so I
it's
think
not skill
Volkov,
stand up too. Not skill in stand-up game.
he's not he's all right. I don't want to say that Marcin Tybura is not skilled in the stand-up game. But here's what I can say. When it comes to striking, I believe Alexander Volkov is way more skilled than Marcin Tybura. So if this is going to stay striking and Marcin Tybura has to go to wrestling, then Volkov has to stave off the shoots. He has to stay away from clinch really is his best friend. Keep it high, move around with your hands, keep to the grab the underarms. Make sure you keep the under grip, head placement, head hips, and head hips and hands. You know the three H's, and after that, create space and stick to striking. That's his recipe to victory right there. Stick to striking.
Right, yes. Stick to striking and avoid takedowns. That's probably Volkov's key to victory. If Dvorak might want to mix it up with his offense, probably get catch Volkov. This is a compelling fight because these are two guys. One of those fight probably it's in that title picture, Hans. It's, you know, they're with, you know, De Lewis, the Blades, the not gone, but Stipe, and I'm forgetting someone else in that weight division.
No, it's more so funny because both guys are trying to establish themselves for similar yet different reasons. Both of them are trying to establish themselves as title contenders. But Volkov is trying to show that, hey, I'm not one of these, you know, guys that are finished and you can feed me to the younger guys and, you know, I'm a stepping stone for them. And Marcin Tybura is trying to say, hey, I'm just not, you know, a one-hit wonder. I have some staying power and I'm here for the division. I'm here to last in the division. So both of these guys are, yeah.
No, finish your point.
Yeah, so both of these guys are trying to, you know, they're both trying to show that they are title contenders, but for different reasons.
Yeah, sure, it's true. But, Volkov, I mean, basically for him, he's not that old. He's only 33, so he's a lot of fights, but still, heavyweight division, you can age, fight well as an older person than most divisions. But still, I get what you mean. You don't want to be a guy who people think they're done or be used as a stepping stone for these younger guys either.
Plus, my thing is, with heavyweight fighters, man, the punishment taken, I think, is way worse. Granted, their bodies are bigger, but the punishment is still being taken. Like, a heavyweight punch is still a heavyweight punch.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, it's crazy. Tybura is older than Volkov by 2 years. At least three years. About almost 3 years he's older than Volkov, which is crazy considering Volkov's seemed like he's been more well-known. And, you know, well-known MMA heavyweights versus Tybura. Well, Tybura is somewhat known, you know, we fought Derek Lewis, that, you know, a couple years ago. But like recently where people are starting to get Tybura's love and his flowers and his praise.
Most definitely. So, yeah, but like we said, both of these guys are just trying to establish themselves in the title picture. And speaking of title picture, let's get right to the main event, man.
Yeah, and older fighters, too.
Most definitely. Glover Teixeira, the older fighter, versus Jan Blachowicz, the younger but, you know, Polish power champion. You kicked this off, Austin. How do you see this going?
Well, first of all, before I break it down, I just want to say, Glover Teixeira's birthday was yesterday. During the press conference, I think the crowd sang happy birthday to him to end the press conference to Glover Teixeira, which is kind of like a cool moment. You know, it's Glover Teixeira. So he just turned 42. Yet on this past day, he can't eat cake yet because he's got to make the weight cut first. But still. If he wins the title, he'll eat all the cake he wants. But yeah.
Most definitely.
Yeah, Jan's also 38. So it's rare to see 38, 42 in a championship fight. Since the ages. You know, even though they're the bigger guys, they're light heavyweight, but still, this is kind of rare. I think it's something we should definitely acknowledge and point out. Because, I mean, maybe a while before it seems again.
It may be, but then again, I think maybe we've had this discussion. Me personally, I feel like the advancement of science and the more knowledge that athletes know of how to take care of their body, personally, also with them like having more money to access to spend on their body, you get more knowledge of what's going on in your body. I think we're going to see fighters having the ability to extend their prime. I think that's going to happen. It is going to be in rare cases because I think some fighters are going to be so focused on trying to extend it that they don't even do anything with their prime. There are a couple of cases to me where I think some fighters right now are a little too patient for their own good. But, it, all in all, I think the science is helping their bodies extend that.
Okay. So, anyway, going to that's a good point. Just science. That might be something to watch out for. Possibly, maybe you might be on something there. Wait and see. But to the fight itself, this is Islam birthday was this week too. So you got two fighters that had recent birthdays in this card. Anyway, but let's break down the fight. This is interesting. Jan Blachowicz has kind of been very underrated, underappreciated. You know, not someone who goes by the radar, not even respect. And you see, like, the Israel fight, everyone finally gave him his respect and his credit. He beat Israel Adesanya in March. But now he's going against Glover Teixeira, a guy who's been in the UFC lightweight division and top five, top eight, top seven guy for, like, the past, I want to say, 8 years? I forgot. There's a stat that his ranking never went below, I believe, 6 or 7 in his entire standing in the UFC, which is crazy. Think about how good he is. But even then, no one thought he was going to be in this position at 42 fighting for the world title, considering, you know, there are a lot of younger guys they threw at him, but he passed the test and he beat all of them. You know, the Anthony Smith fight, he was losing the first two rounds, then came back and beat up Smith and finished him that fifth round. Thiago Santos had adversity. He dropped him, but he got hurt a couple of times, but came back and beat Thiago Santos. In my opinion, the most impressive fight victory of Glover's career, in my opinion. And this is, you know, and here he is fighting for the world title. And now the thing is, Jan's got the Polish power, Polish hammer in his fist. You've seen it before. Knock dudes out, and hurt guys, and guys, you know, they don't want to deal with that. But the thing with Glover is, he's been knocked out before. You know, the only person to truly, like, knock him out was Rumble Johnson in 13 seconds back in 2016. But usually, if you're going to finish Glover, you gotta just beat him up. You can't just, you know, one punch, that's it, game over, unless you're Rumble. Glover, you gotta, like, you know, punch him, hurt him, damage him. You really, really beat him up to take him out. And that's the thing that helped, you know, that's the thing that helped him with the Thiago Santos fight, that he got dropped, but Thiago didn't, you know, wasn't able to, like, keep hurting him. Eventually, Glover was able to, you know, come back and win that fight. That's the thing I want to see. What happens when, you know, does Jan keep going, you know, what happens if Jan throws a power punch, but yet Glover's still standing? Does Jan keep going? Does he try to do something else? Does he try to grapple with Glover Teixeira, because you can make an argument Glover might be a better grappler, maybe, than Jan. Oh, Jan does have several submission victories. No, granted, it's been a while since he's done one, but he does have that under his belt. And well, also, how Glover's, you know, they're both pretty good stand-up guys, so it's a possibility this could be a stand-up fight, because Glover's got great boxing, great stand-up. I mean, he was, it's not for Glover Teixeira, was Chuck Liddell's main training partner back in the day. People forget that, which is, you know, that says a lot, because, you know, it says how long Glover's been involved in the sport. He's training partners with Chuck Liddell. But, most definitely. It'd be interesting, does Glover, how does Glover deal with, you know, Jan's power, you know? Jan tends to fight like a board boxing, kickboxing style. Because if you remember last year in Abu Dhabi, Jan body kicks Dominic Reyes, excuse me, were vicious. I mean, my goodness. I mean, you saw, like, his back and side wall, like bruised up badly. I mean, how does Glover handle that? Does Jan throw that? And how will Glover handle that, those kicks from Jan? Because a lot of those kicks and set up a power punch from Jan. And things like that.
That's a very interesting way of looking at it. But like that kind of lends into my thought process. The way you break it down, I agree with you completely. But for me, I said the best friend for Jan this fight is his stand-up game. He has to keep it standing up. And for Glover, his best friend is wrestling. If he can get through all the power that Jan is dishing out and get a shoot and get a takedown for Jan, I think he can finish Jan on the ground via submission. My only dilemma for Glover was, how was he going to get the takedown early? Because you just don't want to have to go through trying to dodge all those punches or eat a few just to get to, a shoot. and you don't want to expend all the energy early trying to get a shoot, and now you're leaving yourself defenseless for the rest of the fight, and you're kind of just trying to get points. But if Jan is throwing those kicks, how many kicks can you comfortably throw against a grappler? Especially the body kicks. How many can you comfortably throw against a grappler until they catch one and go for a leg sweep? And knowing Glover Teixeira, he's wise enough and hip enough and has enough experience that he's probably watched the tape and go, all right, if I leave him comfortable enough here and he throws that leg kick, it's all money for me. I can get the mount position easy. And so that's my question to you. It's like, how comfortable do you think Jan is going to be throwing those leg kicks, knowing you have a Glover Teixeira who can catch those and immediately flip the way the fight is being viewed?
You're right. Maybe body kick particularly might be troublesome. Glover can catch them, take down Jan. That could be trouble for him. But I think if he does leg kicks and good leg kicks, it can neutralize Glover's movement, because if his legs are hurt, he makes an easy target for Jan to throw punches. Punches and bunches, which can hurt Glover too. So that's something that maybe if he does a leg kick instead of body kicks, that could probably work in Jan's favor. But also, if you're Glover, you might want to check those leg kicks as well. Maybe, I'm pretty sure you will do that. But, it's a good point you make. How if he does body kicks, Glover can just catch him and take him down. And then see how Jan fights off his back. Because Jan does have, several submission victories, but it's been a minute since we see him do a submission victory, though. That's the thing.
Most definitely. So, man, how do you have this fight going?
This is the toughest fight to pick out of all of them. Because you can make an argument for both guys. Probably like to see Jan get more credit and more respect. But also it'd be cool to see Glover Teixeira at 42 become a UFC champion. First time ever. Because if you remember, 7 years ago, he fought John Jones for the heavyweight title. When he was on 25 winning streak, John Jones just dominated him and beat him pretty good. But yeah, so 7 years later, he's getting his second opportunity when no one expected it to. It'd be nice to see that, but this is the toughest fight of all of them to pick. Is this one? And along with this co-main event, but yeah, man,
I can't pick a winner for this fight either. I agree with you there, but the one thing I can say is I'm a liar. This is the one fight that I feel like may go the distance.
Sweet, you really? Because I think the co-main event might go the distance, personally, or this one.
I'd have to disagree with you there. I don't think the co-main event goes the distance.
Okay. We'll see Saturday. We'll see Saturday which fight goes the distance, which ones don't. This is, it's a pretty great card. Think about it. This is really, excellent top to bottom, from opening fight the main card to the end, to the main event. You got older guys, young guys, international fighters. There's a lot of international fighters on this card. There's only one American on this card, which is Sané again. Also, you got five different Russians on this card, from Jan to Islam to Volkov to Hamza and Magomed. Five Russians on this card. And, it's kind of like what I've said about Russian takeover MMA. I know, you don't exactly necessarily agree with me, but Russia right now seems to be on a high in terms of waves in MMA. Especially with all five Russians on this main card.
Most definitely. The last fight I want to talk about, a quick tease, something to look out for. It's going to be the final fight on the prelim card going into the main card. It's going to be Amanda Ribas versus Verna Yanjiroba. Yanjiroba has been very, very impressive in the strawweight division so far. Yeah. I don't see any title contenders coming out of this fight. But for me personally, I think Yanjiroba is going to, like, she's just been very impressive. And so I think this is one of the fights where it's the only female fight on the card, but I think this is one of the fights where it's going to end in fireworks, and one of these ladies is going to end up with a fight of the night bonus. So look out for that.
Yeah, definitely. Performance bonus, yes. I mean, Gina Raiba has 13 submission victories. So she, you know, she's great Brazilian jiu-jitsu practitioner from Brazil. She gets on the ground. I mean, you're in trouble. You know, her two losses were to Carl Esparza, who's a pretty good wrestler, grappler, and Mackenzie Dern. As we know, Mackenzie Dern jiu-jitsu is elite. I mean, it's one of the best in all of MMA, women's MMA. But Verona definitely has good jiu-jitsu in her own right. And Amanda Ribas is, you know, coming off the loss earlier in the year to Marina Rodriguez, you know, via TKO. And Marina, we see how good Marina Rodriguez actually is, where she's
Marina goes on to headline a UFC card. So you got to give respect to the fighters and, you know, who they lost, who they're not chumps. Like everyone who ends up on these cards, they're 9 times out of 10, you're not losing against a chump. You're kind of losing against someone who's gone on to do something great.
Right, exactly. And Marina's headline 2 UFC cards, won both of them. Like I said, one fight away from winning world title. But Amanda Ribas going, you know, is 10-2. She was coming off. Before that, she had won about 5 in a row, including victory over Mackenzie Dern, which, you know, which shows Amanda Ribas is really still an elite fighter. She's ranked number 10, and Gina Raiba is ranked number 12. So these are two girls who are ranked top 12. Like I said, no one's going to be a title contender to this fight, but they'll be a top 10 contender. They're a step closer to fighting for the world title. And like I said, this is the most competitive women's division in all of MMA. Just, you know, well, at least the UFC in the major promotions, at least. You know, one women's strawweight. So they always bring in the strawweight fighters. I always enjoy watching strawweight fighters because they bring it every time. That's clearly the best division in the UFC's women's division. And it's not even close, in my opinion.
I agree with you there. So is there any other fight on the prelims that you kind of want the fans to just, you know, keep an eye out on? We always say it all the time. Pay attention to the preliminaries. That's where your fight of the night is most likely going to come from.
Yes, because there's two fights for both same reasons. It's Tahir. Yeah, hang on. Let me make sure it's
Ulambakov.
Tahir Ulambakov against Alan Nascimento. And flyweight. Then you got featherweight, Ricardo Ramos versus Zaborov. The reason why I bring these two fights up is because both guys are coached by, Habib Nurmagomedov and Javier Mendez. If you know, ever since Habib joined Javier Mendez, fighters who are coached by Habib and Javier are undefeated this year in UFC and Bellator. So I want to see, does that undefeated streak continue this year? Does Javier Mendez and Khabib solidify themselves as coach of the year? You know, with these two victories, if these two guys were out there to win, Zaborov and Tahir, that's something I want to see. And like I said, it's definitely, it'd be pretty cool if that happens. I mean, it just shows that Khabib, you know, great fighter, winning fighter, and now he's doing well as a coach. And also Javier Mendez, although Javier's the head coach in all these fights, it shows that Javier Mendez is still one of the best coaches, probably the greatest coach in MMA history, consider he was having success in the 2000s, you know, Frank Shamrock, and then Rocco, Cain Velasquez, Daniel Cormier. Also, forgot, before that, he was having success with Josh Koscheck and John Fitch, as they fought for the welterweight titles, both of them. And sort of St. Pierre, then Habib, and now Islam, and now these guys. It's just, you know, it's just great to shout Coach Javier Mendez for continuing being an elite head coach all these years and different fires and different styles.
It's an excellent thing. So with that being said, man, what else do you want to talk about?
That's right. I already got nothing really to talk about I can think of. Oh, yeah, I do want to mention that I mentioned last week went to AEW. That was on Saturday here in Orlando. Just a quick recap. It was a recap. It was a fun show. It was great watching live. Seats were great. had a good time. Great crowd was electric. You know, I know it was an MMA show, but pro wrestling, you know, just sprinkling on pro wrestling, MMA's roots in pro wrestling, like I said. And entertaining, you know, the opening match and the main event were the highlights of that show. And the crowd was on fire. I mean, it was like an excellent crowd. Same thing this past Wednesday at Dynamite in Boston, just like Orlando, the crowd was just, the crowd's electric, man. Great crowd can make you enjoy a show a lot more than usually, especially in pro wrestling. Although MMA, you don't exactly need a crowd a good time, but it does help to have a good crowd in MMA as well. Just like pro wrestling, also want to mention that. And also, I do want to mention, the main card start time is 2 o'clock Eastern time, living in the East Coast. 11 a.m. West Pacific time. The reason that's because they're in Abu Dhabi, which has a 7-8 hour time difference ahead of us. That's why this card starts in the afternoon. For those of you who are wondering why it's in the afternoon, because they're in Abu Dhabi and they have eight, seven, eight hours ahead of us. Also, if you have ESPN Plus, you can get it for free. Basically, if you have ESPN Plus, so you don't have to pay pay per view, and This is basically how it feels like to be, if you're living, it's like living in England for BT Sports when they can do the UFC. If you live in the UK, basically. By the way, shout out BT Sports. Their coverage of the UFC is phenomenal over there. Yeah, you know what I'm talking about. Those promo packages and interviews.
Yep.
They do a great job over there at BT Sports and for the UK audience, the UFC. But yes, it's basically free if you have ESPN Plus. Starts at 2 o'clock Eastern time. The main card, the prelims probably start around like, I want to say noon. Yeah, noon.
Well, let's see. It's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Give me one moment.
All right.
One, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight, nine. It's nine fights in the preliminaries.
Okay,
times 15. Let's say realistically all five fights go 15. 9 times 15, that's... I don't even have a calculator. 45. I'm sorry. Huh? You froze a little. Okay, what'd you say? Roughly, no.
I'm sorry, Keith. 135.
Is that? 9, 7.
I think it'll be 135.
Yeah, roughly 135. Divide that by 60. That's about two hours and 15 minutes or so. Starts at 10:30. It seems like the main card will start around 1 o'clock.
I got it right here. Plenary reactions begin at 10:30 a.m. Eastern time zone. That's the beginning of the prelims. From the first prelim all the way to the main card starts at 2 o'clock.
The main card starts at 2? Yeah, yeah. I was kind of, I didn't add in the time they take in for like showing the promos and things of that nature. And usually, if they're giving this card away for free like this, 9 times out of 10, they have a card to preview that they're giving away as well. Yeah. That one's going to be on pay-per-view, but they're about to reveal that card. It seems like they're about to reveal a new card as well. So be on the lookout for that, ladies and gentlemen. Last thing I want to say before we get out of here is I'm going to show it one more time. We have the QR code right there, right here, in the upper corner. You just use your phone, go to the camera, you go to the, you know, just click on the QR reader. It'll take you right to the site. You get some of this swag, this merch, Bronx Sports Jedi Network swag. Look at that,
nice Obi
Toppin Duncan.
The picture,
Return of the Knicks. It lets you know.
Got your blue one.
We got the Jedi. Oh, damn. We got the Jedi right here. Everything is doing good, man. I got Chef Dan on the back right here. I'm all set, baby.
Yeah, I got my own shirt right here, too. You know, wearing one as well. Just want to show support. You know, if you want to show support to us, you know, go to Bronx Sports Jedi merch, buy some merch. We definitely appreciate it. you know, that we appreciate you guys watching us and buying the merchandise. And shout out to everybody who's watching us live and watches us after the videos uploaded too. Thank you guys for watching us and watching us, giving us the likes and enjoying our content. We truly appreciate it. Like I said, there's a lot of channels you can listen to, but you guys chose us and we appreciate that. Thank you very much.
Enjoy, guys. Have a good night. Have a safe weekend.
Yes, and like I said, you can listen to us on audio as well on these podcast platforms, Anchor FM, Spotify, Podbean, Recent FM, and Buzzsprout as well. Want to give that, you know, so that way, you know, if you're on work or busy, you don't want to drain your battery, you can listen to us here. We appreciate you guys doing that. And for Chef Dan and for Austin, thank you guys for watching. Have a good night. Look forward to Saturday and look forward to talking to you guys next week. Goodbye.